Okay, so settling in for a meditation. Give a bit of guidance. And this is to help encourage the mind, direct the mind, begin to get the gears turning, how one approaches the idea of cessation and how this is the experience of peace, the experience of happiness, the experience of joy that we look for in the Four Noble Truths. This is what the teaching leads to, what all of the practice leads to. And once we know how to appreciate it, how to experience it, how to immerse ourselves in it, then we always have the goal of the teachings with us. It's a great way to keep the practice going. So, the first thing we can look at to attend to cessation is looking at probably the coarsest and most obvious and most superficial thing that ceases. Once we have encountered the teachings, there is no going back to the point before we heard them. Once we have heard that desire causes suffering, there's no going back to a point before we were in confusion and doubt as to where our suffering comes from. There's no point going back to before we saw desire as a potential problem. Having heard the teachings, having considered them, we now have knowledge. To just this degree, we are not ignorant, untaught, worldly people. We have been taught, we have been instructed. There are billions and billions of people in the world, but only a fraction of them, a small fraction, have heard these teachings to the degree that they can internalize them, understand what is being alluded to. Those who have not heard these teachings, they continue to live in that directionless state. They don't know where the problems come from. They don't know where to go to get free of their problems. And they turn to so many things, to religions, to diets. They idolize sports heroes and actors and politicians. And then they get so upset when these idols do things that let them down, that they disagree with. Those who have heard the teaching, they understand there are wise people in the world, noble people, people who have a direction, who have a path, who have a goal, and who can speak on this goal and speak on the steps that can be taken towards this goal. The average person, untaught, has a fickle faith, placed superficially on things that are still within the world. For those who have started to learn the teachings, they know there are things in this world that are not shaken by the ups and downs, things that are stable. They know that there is Dhamma, there is truth. So appreciating the degree to which our ignorance has ceased. We are no longer ignorant about where suffering comes from, no longer ignorant about the direction of freedom. We have the Triple Gem, the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. We have things we can place our confidence in, and we feel our confidence growing every day. With this, we see the cessation, the end, the absence of doubt. Skeptical doubt, which is the breeding ground for so many views and opinions and speculations about the nature of the world. So many people staring into the stars or peering into electron microscopes, trying to figure out how everything works. Surgeons dissecting brains, trying to find which neuron is the seat of consciousness, and still not finding one. As our doubt ceases without residue or remainder, we find that these directions that we once turned to try to make sense of it all lose their appeal. People immerse themselves in controversies and ideas and opinions, and gradually we start turning away from these. We see them as a net that one gets caught in, and we avoid them. Doubt has ended, and everything that comes after is the absence of doubt. So, looking in our lives, in our current lives, in our mind, places where we don't have confusion, where we don't have uncertainty, places where we don't get caught in nets of views about the beginning and the ending, the direction of things. At some point, taking a step further, seeing the value of that we got from letting go of all the views and opinions that got us into arguments, we undertake the precepts. And there are many people in this world who are right now not killing, who are not stealing, who are not cheating on their partners or cheating with other people's partners, who are not telling lies and deceiving others. There are many such people right now. But for those who haven't undertaken these things, they can't fully experience or appreciate that which they have because they have not pointed to and laid out and marked out these precepts, these ways of behaving, and undertaken them. They are in the midst of the absence of so many layers of suffering, and they don't even know it unless they specifically consider it. For those who have undertaken the precepts, they have determined, I will not kill, I will not steal, I will not cheat, I will not lie. If we look out into the world, we see that this is a violent, dangerous place at times. There are wars going on. There are many places where you can't leave a possession out in the open or it'll be immediately taken away and stolen. People are sleeping with just about anybody they can. Relationships so complicated, so fraught, so much confusion. Attachment, angst, and suffering. And people are cheating each other with words, with lies and deceptions, thinking that to get what they want is the best possible outcome, not seeing the danger of the lie, not seeing the loss of trust that is inherent. The telling of mistruth. For those who have undertaken precepts, even for those who have just started this undertaking, to live by these precepts. They can be wherever they are right now and say to themselves, right now, in this place, there is no killing, there's no fear, violence. Right now, in this place, there's no fear. My stuff will be taken, or that others will take my stuff, or that I will take others' stuff. Right here, there is no fear of the loss of possessions. Right here, there is no fear of misdeeds in relationships. Right here, there is no worries about the truthfulness of the words that I speak. Might not always know everything or be well informed, but right here I can try to say what I think is most accurate. And thus others can trust the words that come out of my mouth and assess for themselves. And with this, we can see, if we turn to it, the absence of all these many kinds of suffering. And there are many kinds of substances that dull, confuse, and dilute the mind. And sometimes we have to take something because we're sick or in pain. But as we sit here now, we can assess all of the things that we haven't taken, all of the ways that our mind is not diluted through various chemicals. And we can say, to this degree, by avoiding those things, I have possession of my faculties as much as can be expected at this stage of my life, which is something so many people in the world, because they don't attend to it, cannot say. Many disciples of the Buddha, even before attaining to samadhi, and before developing psychic powers, even before realizing for themselves nibbana, would go up to the Buddha and remark with delight, "Oh, how many things you have protected me from! How many various forms of suffering have ceased since I undertook this holy life." Some would sit under trees in the forest, owning nothing, eating scraps of food tossed into a bowl. They would smile and they would laugh and they would say, "Oh, what bliss." Looking at the state of the world and the people in it and realizing how many kinds of suffering they do not have. Seeing for themselves the joyous absence of those forms of suffering. Having undertaken precepts, having tried meditation from time to time, put effort into it, learning to sit, learning to develop mindfulness, dealing with the various impulses of the body to get up, to speak, to act, to change posture, looking at these, feeling them, and not reacting. Over time, we begin to learn the lessons that the precepts taught us, that not every impulse is fruitful. Not every instinct should be gone along with. Some are trying to get pleasure, some are trying to avoid pain, but it takes mindfulness to assess what is it we actually want to be doing? What is our focus? What is our goal? And what actions move us towards that goal? This exercise of meditation helps us separate from the mind, and we begin to see the difference between action and reaction. Actions are taken with intention, whereas reactions are pre-programmed responses that are not always in our best interests. To whatever degree we have developed meditation and the ability to do this and sustain our mindfulness, we can see that the state of being controlled and obsessed by our hindrances has subsided and even ceased from time to time. In this world where the average untaught person struggles to sit still for even 5 seconds, let alone a minute, let alone five, let alone 50. We have learned how to find a quiet place removed from distraction, how to sit, concentrate, paying attention to the body or the breath, to a mantra, to a wholesome emotion. Letting this focus of the mind help us experience peace. And with it, the body and our experience of the body and its impulses, distracting influence subsides. We realize for long stretches of the time we're not paying attention to our body at all. And if we're asked afterwards, was it there? We can say, I don't know. I wasn't paying attention. And what a wonderful, delightful thing that is to be able to say. In this world where people are controlled by their impulses, dictated by the needs of their body, we can be happy and content and directed, setting cares of the body aside. Whole layer of suffering, the suffering of reactions, is absent. We are finally able to think, finally able to breathe, finally able to just be. Able to appreciate, able to be friendly, able to be equanimous, balanced and at peace. All of these states are immersed in the absence of so many layers of suffering. As we get a taste for the ways that the mind can be freed from reactions and impulses, we begin to see those things that feed passive experiences, that feed reactions, that feed the hindrances. We can also see that this body, though it is a vehicle to some interesting experiences, also brings with it so much burden, so many pains. You see that this body, which is our vehicle to experiences in the sensual world, in truth is a rickety construction. Skin, flesh, blood, and bone. It has pains, it has aches, it has needs, it gets hot, it gets cold, has to urinate and defecate. We feed it, and then hours later, we have to feed it again. We begin to let go of our craving for sights, sounds, and smells, flavors, tactile sensations. Begin to let go of wanting to go to shows and movies, wanting to get exotic foods and go on vacations to exciting places somewhere else. Some other time. We stop yearning for an experience outside of the one we're having right now. There's nothing we could get in the world we realize would rival the peace that we feel just attending to all of the ways that we are not suffering. All of the ways that the causes of our suffering have ceased. And we realize, so we let go of our passion for things out there, for delights that can only be experienced by the body. The mind never gets to truly taste or feel because it has no form. We begin to see that that very craving for the world, craving for experiences through the body, was a terrible burden, a terrible burning, a thirst. That has, for our whole lives, been driving us into situations that cause us trouble and grief. And in letting go of the craving for external things, we feel that thirst subside. We can finally know what it feels like to not be thirsty, to not be yearning, to not be craving. We can see that it was a burning state, a painful state. State so common to people of the world that they don't even realize they're thirsty, don't realize they're on fire with that craving. And we see for ourselves that at any moment, we can see for ourselves all of the things that we're not craving right now. Even if we tell ourselves, oh, yes, but there is. Still, I do have these urges or impulses or desires from time to time. Still, we could enumerate and never get to the end of counting different things that we don't crave right now and say to ourselves, I'm not hungry, I'm not thirsty, I don't need to go to the bathroom. I'm not too hot, not too cold. Don't want a car, I don't want a house, I don't want a new partner, don't want a new job, don't want my old job, don't want to go on vacation, don't want to stay here. So many things that are not obsessing us, pulling at us, driving us. So many forms of craving that we are not being burned by, such that even if we do feel a little bit of thirst, a little bit of burning. Know that still there is some little ember of desire in our heart for various things. We can say yes, but it's not a raging, roaring fire. It is but a little ember. And from time to time, when we think this way, we train ourselves to see this, we will feel that little ember go out. In that moment, we are not looking at an emptiness, a void, but we will see in those moments that we have contentment. We have joy. We have a goal. We have self-confidence. We have morals. We have wholesome mind states. We have the peace of being free from reactions. So many layers of peace. So many layers of suffering that have ceased. Gone, not because we had to destroy them. Gone, not because we have to work to shut them out of the mind every moment. Just gone because the causes for them are not present. Because we stopped making the causes of those forms of suffering. The final cause of suffering, we might begin to appreciate. Sitting here, calm, content, filled with faith, energy, wanting to better understand Nibbana, freedom. We begin to see in ourselves this passion towards this very world, towards this very life. All of the ways we've created a story of who we are and what we are and what we are doing. As we sit in meditation and we stop thinking about these things, we realize they stop mattering. For a while. When we intentionally turn our mind to that, to the ways, all the ways that we become don't matter. Then in our meditations, we can see how ephemeral, transparent, insubstantial, all these identities actually are. They only work in certain times and places and circumstances. They are not essentially us. They don't define us. When we are calm and focused and free, they cease to exist. When we don't think about the past or anticipate the future, our identity ceases to exist, and there just is a body, just is a mind. Just that much right here in this present moment. No person, no relationships. No possessions, no job, no responsibilities, no worldly existence. When we see this deepest truth of the mind, we can feel that final vestige of craving for continued existence, part of us that says, oh, what could I be next? falls away. It's not necessary. It's not necessary to want to continue to exist in order to be here now. And as we let go of a desire for a future existence, we see finally that it was to burning us. It was a way that we were missing the existence we have right now, missing all the potentials for peace. Dwelling on the past, looking forward to the future. It's just a subtle form. Getting caught in a totally different kind of net. These are activities we don't need to do. It is a subtle form of suffering, but at this point, why tolerate even such a subtle form of suffering as this? This we can let go of all craving for continuing in this samsara. Easily, lightly, let it go, step aside from that net. When we do, everything is still here. Our life doesn't cease, our mind doesn't cease. All that ceases was that burden that we were carrying, trying to set something aside for the future, future we can never know, because it'll always just be the present moment. As we can continue sitting, sit for another 10 minutes, and then I'm gonna get up, do walking meditation, continue sitting, continue sitting and walking till noon Eastern time.